Good afternoon. This is Chair Ruth Richardson, and pursuant to House Rule 10.1, I call this remote meeting of the Education Policy Committee to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Chair Richardson?
Present.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Bennett? Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bowe?
Present.
Representative Christensen?
Present.
Representative Edelson?
Present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Frazier?
Present.
Representative Jordan? Representative Keeler?
Present.
Representative Moeller?
Present.
Representative Mueller?
Present.
Representative Poston?
Present.
Representative Scott? Representative Erdahl?
Present.
Representative Wasluwick?
Present.
Representative Bennett? Representative Jordan? Representative Scott?
I think Representative Scott and Representative Bennett will be a little late.
Thank you. Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you. Members, there was an error in the meeting minutes from February 10th. Which were approved on Monday. So we have an updated version. Representative Feist, have you had a moment to be able to review those edited minutes?
Yes, I have, and I move those minutes.
Thank you, Representative Feist. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes of the February 10th meeting are approved. Next, we have our current minutes from February 15th. I'll keep picking on you, Representative Feist. Have you had an opportunity to review?
Yes, I have, Madam Chair, and I move those minutes as well.
Sure. Any discussion to the motion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The minutes of our February 15th meeting are approved. Members, we have three bills on up in committee today. The first of those, Representative Yuk Kim, who I think I saw on my screen, appears to be here. So we'll be starting with her House File 378. And I will move that House File 378 be referred to the Education Finance Committee. Representative Yuakim, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for hearing House File 378 in committee today and for your consideration. As an education support professional, this bill is near and dear to my heart. House File 378 requires that education support professionals, ESPs, also known as paraprofessionals, are given 16 hours of paid professional development or training per year. The bill proposes an appropriation to pay for this that we will need to be worked out in Finance Committee. There are also requirements that those who work with individuals, students with disabilities must be paid given paid time to review a student's IEP, and or time to at least collaborate with the student's teacher regarding the plan before they work with the student. This communication between teacher and paraprofessionals who are working with students with special needs is so very important so that the para knows what triggers the students may have, what works to calm them down or motivate them, and what vulnerabilities they may have. Many of these requirements are already happening in our schools, but this bill would not only make sure the training is happening, it would also provide the funding for schools to provide the training. This year already, your committee has heard from teachers and parents and administrators and school boards how important trained and qualified support staff are in meeting our students where they are at, especially during this last year during a global pandemic. This last intern was one of the first ones in a while that I've not worked as an ESP, and I miss being in the classroom. In previous years, I've worked as an ESP with kindergartners with special needs in a level three program at Aquila Elementary in St. Louis Park. I've also worked as a paraprofessional in early childhood and at the high school level. Over the years, I've seen how effective professional training can be. I've also have seen what happens when the training's not available, or when you start after the school year has begun and the training has to be done on your own time. That happened to me when I started at Aquila. Even though I started at the beginning of the school year, it was after some of the training had been provided. So I had about 5+ hours of online modules dealing with health and safety that had to be viewed on my own time. I was happy to do it, but our ESPs deserve to get paid for their time when they're training to do their jobs. Finding those funds can be even harder than finding the time. With the appropriation, the bill would provide our schools some relief. St. Louis Park is not alone in trying to find money for training. Many districts are forced to pick and choose what they can afford versus training their ESPs fully as a functioning team that could do so much more to serve our students. While this is my story, I know that it's not a unique one. There's a letter of support in your packets from the Coalition for Children with Disabilities, but now I would like to turn the rest of this testimony over to those who have also had a personal experience in our classrooms. I have Becky Espin here from Education Minnesota's Osseo Area School Educational Support President, and Michelle Denard, who is a Special Education Support Paraprofessional in the Osseo Area School District as well.
Thank you. Becky Espin, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Richardson and committee members. My name is Becky Espin. I'm an educational support professional from Osseo Area Schools, currently on leave to serve as the full-time release president representing 800 educational support professionals. This is my 29th year in the Osseo Schools. I'm here once again to advocate for funding to support training for paraprofessionals. Can you imagine a profession where there is no initial training for a new employee? Can you imagine a profession in which there is not ongoing training for employees so they can enhance their professional skills? When an educational support professional is hired, there's no time for even a building orientation or sometimes even an introduction to the teachers you will be working with to support students. You'll be working with students with multiple needs, whether that's in special ed, English language learners, and or behavior support, to name a few. We are hired to provide academic support as well as physical and emotional or behavior support, all without any formal training on different disabilities, de-escalation, or restorative practices. You either learn it as you go, or you may fail miserably. This is not what we want for our students, and it's not what we want for our employees. Many of us have chosen this as a profession and have been asking for the training to excel in our profession, and that there always seems to be a hierarchy in districts as to who is more worthy of the training. The standard answer is there's no money for educational support professionals. While there are state statutes in place that declare what school districts are to provide educational support professionals in the area of training, specifically statute 125A.08 for special education support professionals, and statute 120B.363 for initial training, these statutes are being ignored by districts because they declare there's no funding. While I don't believe that districts should be able to pick and choose what statutes they follow, providing funding for districts to comply with statute would be a great leap forward. This year has been especially difficult for educational support professionals. We've had to reinvent the way that we support students in an ever-changing models of learning without training and using district technology or learning platforms. We have been that daily support for students struggling not only with learning, but with the social, emotional, and behavior fallout, all without the training that the teachers and other school support personnel have. We do this because our passion is working with students. What we're asking for is funding for districts to provide what they should be for educational support professionals and for the students that we support. Thank you, committee members, for the opportunity to advocate for the educational support professionals. It's been an honor.
Thank you for your testimony, and also congratulations on 29 years of doing this work as well. Up next, we have Michelle Denard. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. I think that you may be muted. Okay, now I don't know if your computer may be muted or if you're using. We can hear you now.
Oh, okay. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Michelle Denard. I am a special education paraprofessional in the Osseo School District 279. I have worked in the Osseo area schools for 16 years. I love my job and I want to help all students. I work with students with special needs in the transition program, ages 17 to 21. My students have behavior and emotional disorders and learning difficulties, fetal alcohol syndrome, bipolar disorders, and other mental health and physical diagnoses, etc. These are very complicated diagnoses, and proper training is essential to learn how to best support our students, all students. It's important that all students' needs are met, no matter how complicated their situation. For example, in our program, we might get a new student who uses a wheelchair. As a special education paraprofessional, we are the staff required to transfer the student out of the wheelchair in order for the student to use the restroom. It is unsafe and inappropriate for us to learn how to meet the student's needs 30 minutes prior to helping the student. We not only need to learn how to meet the student's physical needs, but we need to know what the student's IEP requires for support and goals. This is inequitable for ESPs. We work with students as well as teachers, and sometimes we are with
Ms. Denard,
students more than
your audio is starting to go out. I wonder if
we need this training without paid time set aside for the important learning. We do not have a chance to do this. When we walk into our building to work with students, we are required to meet the students' needs. And without the appropriate paid training, it is impossible. Most training is for licensed staff a week or two before school starts. For ESPs, we have to always get training in the evening or when all ESPs.
Ms. Denard, are you able to hear me?
Your audio is
a little garbled. You may want to turn your camera off.
Sorry.
You can maybe get a better.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you.
Can you hear me?
We are able to hear you. You can proceed if you can hear me.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
We are able to hear you. Please proceed.
Can you hear me?
Ms. Denard, are you able to hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Your audio is a little garbled. You may want to turn your camera off and maybe get a better.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, so I don't know where I left off. Okay, so.
You can proceed if you can hear me.
Okay. We not only need to learn how to meet the students' physical needs, but
we are able to hear you.
Okay. Okay. We not only need to learn how to meet the student's physical needs, but we need to know what the student's IEP requires for support and goals. This is inequitable for ESPs. We work with students as well as teachers, and sometimes we are the we are with the students more than the teachers. So we need this training. Without paid time set aside for this important learning, we do not have a chance to do this. When we walk into our building to work with students, we are required to meet the students' needs. And without the appropriate paid training, it is impossible. Most training is offered for licensed staff a week or two before school starts. For ESPs, we have to always be training in the evening or when all ESPs have the day off from school. With that, a lot of ESPs have children and other jobs that they have to go to in the evening hours, or they have no one to care for their children while they go to train to help their students. If ESPs can get the training at the same time when licensed staff get the training during summer, or when licensed staff get a day off for professional development, ESPs should be able to do professional development with licensed staff that will be beneficial for both staff and students. We are required in special education to take a CPI training, which stands for Crisis Prevention Intervention. Most of the time when the training is offered, most ESPs are unable to do the training due to the time frame when they are offered, and no time good to take it when the time is needed to be with the students. When we normally take a training, it's not paid training, and we have to do it on our day off from school. On behalf of all Minnesota ESPs, I ask you to please support this bill so we can have proper tools we need to help all students. Thank you, Representative Yoakum, for authoring this bill, and thank you, Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you for your testimony. And I'll just note that if you maybe have the live stream playing in the background, you may want to stop that, and you may have a bit better bandwidth in case there are questions for you following our public testimony. So currently for public testimony, we have signed up Kim Lewis with the Minnesota School Boards Association. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Kim Lewis, and I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association. We are a statewide organization representing all 333 school boards. We appreciate the opportunity to weigh in on House File 378, and we also appreciate the opportunity that we've had to work with the author as this bill has evolved, especially with some of the changes and improvements that have been incorporated to allow for more flexibility in timing and professional development for our school's EAs. We hope to be able to continue to work with Representative Yoakum to build more flexibility into how the bill is implemented. For example, the bill states that there is a number of hours of training, and this will need to be adjusted to reflect the amount of revenue that is eventually allocated for the bill. In general, school boards are opposed to unfunded mandates. MSBA believes that the bill has two cost areas that so far have no funding attached. Paid time for training outside the workday comes at a cost, and time away from students certainly comes at a cost as well. In addition, the mandate for school administration to provide an annual certification of compliance to the commissioner would have the cost of personnel and record keeping, et cetera. So again, we look forward to working with Representative Yoakum as this bill moves forward. And Madam Chair, we thank you for your time today and the members of the committee, and I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else logged into the Zoom hearing who wishes to speak for or against the bill? Please use the raised hand function to be recognized. Not seeing anyone wishing to speak further on the bill. We will move on to member questions. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this question is for the author. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Joachim, I'm looking at your appropriation, even though I know this is going to finance, but I'm wondering, the appropriation seems to cover orientation and professional development, but as I read the bill under paragraph C, clause 2, that the professional must be either given paid time or time during the day to review the IEP or be briefed. So are those reviews billable, for example, to special education, or are you going to include that in your appropriation, or do you have some other idea?
Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson. Well, actually, in statute, and I can't cite which one, paras and are supposed to be allowed to read the IEPs during their time at school so they know how to work with the students. So that's kind of already built in. This could be as simple as a conversation with the teacher about the student and what needs to be done that day, or what the teacher may have learned in their last IEP meeting with the family. So it's not going to be an extensive amount of time, but it is very, very necessary. A lot of our paras and ESPs that are working at level 3 and level 4 facilities are working with medically fragile students. They're working with students that have high needs, and they need to know what their triggers are. They need to know how to take care of them. As Ms. Denard mentioned, just even learning how to take a student out of a wheelchair to help them toilet, these are things that ESPs need to be trained on, and our students deserve to have ESPs that are trained. And I'm also glad that Ms. Denard mentioned CPI training, crisis prevention and intervention training. I took that myself when I started my first job at Hopkins, but you have to be renewed every 2 years. And by the time I got to Aquila, they were having, because of budgets, they were having to pick and choose who could get renewed for training. And unfortunately, this very valuable training wasn't available to all of our ESPs. And when we look at the fiscal note, we did this last time. We adjusted the hours to the amount of money that was going to be available. So it's still very flexible, and I'm more than happy to work with MSBA and AMST with this. Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, perhaps Representative Joachim, you would like to cross-reference in that clause 2 if there is statutory reference to the para to read and review the IEP, since you have that must be either, perhaps a cross-reference there would help allay some of the concerns that have been raised. Thank you.
Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will follow up with that.
Thank you. Representative Wasilik.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say thank you to the bill author for bringing this bill forward, and thank you to the folks who testified in support, the folks who are doing the work on the ground in our schools. I work in a school-based child care program and can attest to the fact that it is much easier to work with kids in our schools when we know more about them and their needs and the things that might, the ways that we work with students that might be better or worse for the students. Having been on the end of not having that information, and having that information is much easier and much more productive to work with students when we know that background information that might be helpful in working with them. So just want to thank the author again for bringing this forward. And I think it's really, really important piece of legislation to ensure that, you know, kids of all different levels, with all different needs, are really getting the best sort of support and guidance from our professionals and people that they can get. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wasilik. Representative Poston.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Joachim, for bringing this bill. I think our paraprofessionals have always been very important, but probably never more so than right now. I recently spent a day in a first grade class with a teacher that did not have a para, had 25 students and definitely had, I think, what you called a high needs student. She had some students that have some mental health issues like we're seeing more and more of today. And she had a student that was a diabetic. And she didn't have a para, and the nurse for the school is the nurse at two schools and wasn't there that day. So this particular teacher couldn't even take her lunch break because she wouldn't leave her students while they were at lunch and didn't have a para to fill in for that piece, which I guess they normally do. So I think paras are going to be more and more important as there's more and more issues in our schools. And it's important that we figure this out, work this out, and make it work. For whatever it's worth, this is my third year in a row going into this teacher's classroom. And I have to admit it, I once again lost the vowel game. I just can't seem to win. But it's quite an experience, and when you see a teacher that's juggling all those balls, you really wish they had that para helping them. So thank you for the work you're doing on this. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Polston, and better luck next year on the Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I see we see another bill before us again today that has more mandates on local school districts. I think I was the only one to vote against Representative Erdahl's bill for the very same reason. And Madam Chair, it seems the culture of this committee is to write mandates into law, and then we go back to our districts and school districts chew us out for doing that, and rightfully so. And I just wonder why the culture of this committee is to tell local school districts how they need to run their operation. We are not smarter than them. We are not more nimble than them. This is a patronizing approach for us to tell school districts how to run their shop. I can understand Representative Joachim giving them money for maybe a targeted area or something. That's a different argument. But we are mandating something into law here. The funding could easily go away or not happen, and the school districts again be left with another bare unfunded mandate. We've got a bunch of them that happen. It raises property taxes. It raises the ire of administrators, teachers, parents, and students alike. We shouldn't do it, even though we think our ideas are the smartest or the best. Putting a mandate on a local school district is not the way to go. For that reason, I'm going to vote against the bill.
Okay, we've got three members with hands up, and I'll just remind members that we have two bills to get through. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Joachim, for all your leadership on this. I know this is a bill that's really important, and we've heard some really great testimony from some of our local presidents about why this matters for our EAs and SEAs, but can you talk a little bit And maybe Representative Joachim or maybe President Denard or Becky could talk a little bit about how this will impact children and the children that you serve. We know that ESPs work with a lot of children with a lot of needs, but can you talk about the difference that professional development training for ESPs has on student outcomes?
Chair Joachim.
I would just briefly say that, well, first, thank you, Representative Poston, for going in the classroom and continuing to go back. I miss being in there this year, and you really do get that firsthand experience. And even if it's just part of an hour, but being there every single day, you realize that paras are not just an extra set of hands. They're an integral part of a team and delivering education to our students. And I don't know how you quantify that in numbers, but as Representative Poston said, he saw what happens when there's not that para in the room and what that teacher also has to go through without that other teammate there to help them. Maybe some of my testifiers could say it more eloquently than I could.
Ms. Denard, are you there, or Ms. Hespin?
I am still here. This is Becky Hespin.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Having been in a classroom for a large number of years, knowing and seeing how ESPs that are not trained, come in and interact with kids. I have seen situations in behaviors that have escalated because ESPs, our educational support professionals, have not been trained in how to de-escalate situations. We also provide academic support. And when you come in and they have changed the math program or the English program, and teachers have been trained on it, and you're supposed to support that learning for students, and they hand you a book and say, figure it out yourself. That's not the best that we can do for kids to support them in their academic endeavors. Knowing disabilities and how to handle things, knowing how if you are a traumatic brain injury and that your brain learns different than others, how to reinforce the learning that they're trying to learn, right? If you don't know how, you're not helping. You're just standing there. And I think, especially with all this distance learning, we have seen more and more how we support students. Teachers teach the lesson. We did all the small breakout group supporting the lesson that was already taught. We're the ones that did the study halls. We're the ones that checked in every day. If you don't know what you're doing, are you helping students? Probably not. We need to know how to be the most effective that we can be with our kids. That's what we're there for. That's our passion. We want them to learn. We want them to achieve as much as they possibly can. And literally all of those, when we talk about de-escalation too, we talk about not only in the classroom, but I don't know, when's the last time you've been in an elementary lunchroom? Sometimes that's just a combat area. You need to know how to relate to kids and how to de-escalate situations, or you're just making things worse. And we're asking, I get that with this, but what we're asking here literally is that you just fund the statute that's already there. Like you have a statute 125A.08 about the individualized education programs, about special ed ESPs and what they're supposed to know. We're also asking for in the credential, the initial training. You know, I literally have had people come in, stay one day and walk right out because they haven't had any training. And this is not what they signed up for. And we can't get ESPs in Osseo the way it is. We always have at least 35 openings. We can't afford to let good people go just because we haven't trained them. So I hope that answered your question.
Thank you. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief. I just want to say that I've been in the classrooms. I've been around ESPs for years now. I understand how vital their role is in ensuring the success of our students. And I think what we really have to consider here when we're thinking about not pushing forward these type of policies is, what are we saying to our students that really need the support and really need these individuals to be there for them? Our ESPs are oftentimes the most diverse educators in the school building. Means they're connecting with some of our most diverse populations in the school building. And it's vitally important that they have the training that they need to help our students be successful. Just wanted to make that point.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will also be brief. I want to thank Chair Joachim for authoring this bill. I have a personal stake in it. I wonder if one of my children had a para available, if his we'd be in a different spot with his learning. I'll never know. So I'll make 2 points. Number one, we pay our workers, bottom line. We pay our workers, and that means we pay them in their training. I'm a flight attendant, and I'm very well trained, and I'm paid for that training. And if you're having a heart attack on my plane, would you prefer that I just stand there wringing my hands because we needed to make cuts? Or would you like to know that I have been well trained and paid for that training? And number two, we don't put a price on our children and their learning and the help that they get in their learning. And so that means we fund, regardless of how, to have trained professionals to do so. When I talked to voters about education when I was running, I did not find one voter that said that they wouldn't pay a little extra to make sure that our children were taken care of. And that includes children that learn traditionally and children that learn in non-traditional ways. So this is really rather a moral decision that we're making. And I would just leave that there for members of the committee to think about. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Burke. Chair Joachim, last word.
Thank you, members, for the discussion and the questions and so eloquently stating what I was trying to do too today is that ESPs are the folks in our schools who provide most of the direct services to our students, not just our students with disabilities, but support for the entire student population. And we trust our ESPs to be very important caretakers to do tasks that they need professional development to be successful in with their students and in their careers, and we owe them at least the chance to receive that training. You have heard testimony about how important and effective that this training is, and I sit before you with personal experience of how valuable that training can be. So thank you, members, and I ask you for your support of this bill.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. I renew my motion to re-refer House File 378 to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Drozdkowski?
No.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Berg?
Yes.
Representative Bowe?
Yes.
Representative Christensen?
Yes.
Representative Edelson?
Yes.
Representative Feist?
Yes.
Representative Frazier?
Yes.
Representative Jordan?
Yes.
Representative Keeler?
Yes.
Representative Moeller?
Yes.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Poston?
Yes.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl? Representative Erdahl? Representative Wasilewicz?
Yes.
Representative Erdahl?
Yes. Yes.
Got it.
Okay, Chair Joachim, it looks like you are on your way. The ayes have it. Good luck in education finance. Next up, we have House File 469. Representative Moeller, would you like to move your bill to be laid over for possible inclusion?
Yes, so moved, Madam Chair.
Great. I understand that you have an amendment. Would you like to move your A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that you would like?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll move the A1 amendment.
Great. All in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, we have your bill properly before us. You may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to bring House File 469, the Seizure Smart Schools Bill, before the committee. The bill has bipartisan support, and thank you to Representative Baker and the Epilepsy Foundation for bringing this important issue to my attention. We know that 1 in 10 people will have a seizure during their lifetime, and that here in Minnesota, over 7,000 children are estimated to live with epilepsy. Today, many teachers and staff lack the tools and awareness they need to recognize and respond appropriately to seizures that happen at school. This bill helps us fix that problem by increasing access to training materials for school staff and ensuring students with epilepsy have a seizure action plan that guides the response they need from those around them. Free training materials and guidelines for schools to be seizure smart are already available and being used in schools across Minnesota with much success, but unfortunately they're not being taken up equally. And our hope is that this bill ensures that students with epilepsy from all backgrounds are safe in the school they attend. This is a cost-neutral proposal, and advocates have worked with key stakeholders over the past 2 years to shape consensus language that brings us to where we are today. And I'd like to thank those stakeholders and the Epilepsy Foundation for working on that language. I'd like to just point out the bill is drafted in a way to give schools a lot of flexibility in implementation. For example, the identification of an employee at each school site could be the identification of a particular position rather than a specified individual. And similarly, the school day is not specifically defined and can be determined by the school. The bill does not create a duplicative process as it wouldn't require documentation in addition to a 504 IEP. If this information is included in one of those, that's sufficient. The ultimate goal here is to make sure there's a plan in place to have someone with knowledge of how to respond when the student is at school. And by bringing awareness of epilepsy to the education community, students living with epilepsy or seizure disorder can feel safe in school and reach their full academic potential. And with that, Madam Chair, I have a few testifiers ready to go.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. I have on my list Tricia Zeller. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, hopefully you can hear me. My name is Tricia Zeller, and today I share my family's personal story and support for House File 469 Seizure Smart Schools legislation. I reside in Chanhassen. I'm also the Vice President of the Board of the Epilepsy Foundation of Minnesota. But most importantly, I'm a wife and mother of two fantastic daughters. My youngest daughter, Rachel, who should be on the screen here somewhere, you can see is 14 and an eighth grader at Pioneer Ridge Middle School. She's a tenacious young lady, works very hard, has a kind, empathetic heart, but also Rachel has epilepsy. Without medication control, Rachel has over 300 seizures a day. Most of her seizures are controlled through quite a cocktail of medications, and my family lives by alarms, ensuring she takes her medications as close to 12 hours apart as possible. As a parent with a child with special needs, every day I'm steeped in worry and concern for her health and well-being. Epilepsy is a very inconsistent neurological disorder. You never know how, when, or where a seizure will strike, and when it does, you pray that she's in a safe and secure environment where she'll get immediate emergency care. This pandemic's definitely challenged us over the last year. Distance learning was not a term I even knew a year ago. But as difficult as this last year has been, there's been one large silver lining for my family, and that Rachel has been home under our care, which is one less worry when she has a seizure, and that the people around her will have the training and fundamental understanding of what emergency care she needs. Tomorrow, however, Rachel returns to physical school 2 days a week in the hybrid model, and my anxiety and worry will quickly return. Will Rachel be safe and receive the care she needs in school should she have a seizure? Today, I'm asking each of you to be proactive, to lead your colleagues in the House and support this bill, protecting all Minnesota's students. Seizure Smart Schools creates legislation and a framework of ensuring all schools and districts in Minnesota can access epilepsy response materials to protect their students. As the nurse's office has Band-Aids for potential wounds, they should also have access to Seizure Smart training materials so they know how to effectively respond to seizures and their epileptic students. If Seizure Smart School saves one child through proper emergency treatment and care when a seizure happens, it's worth it. This is not a partisan issue. It's the right thing to do. As a parent, I want Rachel to be happy, experience the joys of learning, but most importantly, above all, we just want her to be safe. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony and your willingness to share your family's personal story as well. Up next, we have Lindsay Ballou.
Hi, thank you, Madam Chair and members, for having me here today. Sorry, I should have gone first, so I didn't feel that safe when my daughter's at school. My name is Lindsay Bolio, and I am a parent of a student with epilepsy. Elise had her first GTC, or grand mal seizure, at 14 months. She's now 9 and has had thousands since this. Her diagnosis is Dravet syndrome. We have exhausted all medications and are awaiting a clinical trial through the mail. Prior to Elise entering kindergarten, I spent hours and weeks making sure that the staff was ready for her. Knowing After speaking with the Epilepsy Foundation, they gave an in-service to her school. So they were prepared, or a majority of the staff were prepared for her arrival and how to administer her rescue meds. She is now in third grade, and her staff, and frankly all the staff at the school at this point, know what to do when a seizure occurs with her. But it took a lot of work to get there on my end, and it would be really nice if there was an overall plan in place for schools to have general training. She finally went back to in-classroom school on January 25th, and the head nurse had enough foresight to train all of the staff on a lease in her situation, so if someone had to quarantine, there would be additional staff that already knew what to do. I, the nurses, and her special education teacher, and her paras have spent so much time trying to educate others. It would be wonderful if it was already in action that the schools had the resources they need so my daughter and other students can stay safe. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bolio, for your testimony. And thank you also for being willing to share your family's story with us today as well. We appreciate you doing that. Up next, we have Nikki Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Nikki Baker, and I am the Community Health Services Director at the Epilepsy Foundation of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of HF-469 today. Statistically, we know that about one in every 26 people will develop epilepsy in their lifetime, and one in 10 people will have a seizure. Youth under the age of 18 are one of the leading populations to develop epilepsy, so we can be assured that a seizure response is relevant to every school. For schools looking for Minnesota-based support, the Epilepsy Foundation has a number of fantastic resources already available for free. Those resources can be as simple as a seizure first aid poster, which is available in English, Somali, Spanish, and Hmong, to a classroom kit that includes educational resources for teachers, parents, and students alike, to live and on-demand trainings for school nurses and school personnel. In addition to local materials, the National Epilepsy Foundation and the National Association of School Nurses also offer free guides and tools on a seizure response. The Epilepsy Foundation of Minnesota has already trained dozens of schools to become a seizure smart, to help prepare health services personnel, educators, school personnel, and students to recognize and respond to seizures. Our team has provided these free resources to schools across the state, including War Road, Alexandria, Laverne, and here in the metro area. One highlight to note is Waconia Public Schools, which is a seizure smart district. We think this bill is a great step forward and builds upon the success that we've already seen with seizure smart schools here in Minnesota. I thank you for your time today, and I urge you to support HF-469.
Thank you for your testimony. Let's see here. It doesn't look like we have anyone who signed up to testify beforehand. Is there anyone else logged into the Zoom hearing who wishes to speak for or against this bill? Please use the raise hand function to be recognized. Rachel Zeller, please introduce yourself for the record, and please proceed.
Hi, I'm Rachel Zeller, and I have epilepsy. I am 14, and I'm in eighth grade. I have epilepsy. I take lots of pills every day to stop my seizures, but still sometimes I have them. I wish they would just go away. I go to a lot of medical appointments. I hope I can drive when I turn 16. I want to be a canine police officer. I worry at school about having a seizure and people helping me. I know it worries my parents a lot too. They make sure the nurse and my teacher knows to watch out for me in case I have a seizure. Jesus, my schools would make me feel better and safer at school. I hope you will support this bill and make my days a little bit easier. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for being willing to share a little bit about yourself as well. Is there anyone else logged into the Zoom hearing who wishes to speak for or against the bill? Just a reminder to use the raise hand function to be recognized. Okay. Seeing no one else, we'll move on to member questions. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm very supportive of making sure that our schools are prepared to handle children who have seizure disorders. And actually, in my classroom, I've had that before, had students with seizure disorders. And I'm just curious, so the process when I was teaching was that we would develop a 504 plan for that student, and the student nurse, or not the student nurse, the district nurse headed that up. And part of that 504 plan was to make sure that any staff person who would be in charge of that student, supervising or however, would be prepared if that child had a seizure. So I'm just curious, and this might be a question for the bill author or someone else, but how would this legislation differ from what a 504 plan already requires? Because it seems like, at least in my school district, this was already happening, and I'm just curious the difference here.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Bennett. So it's my understanding that if that's in place, that they wouldn't, that would satisfy the requirements of the bill. But I will, I would like to turn this over perhaps to Ms. Baker to explain why this is necessary in light of those 504 plans or IEPs.
Ms. Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Mueller. There is a percentage of students that do qualify for a 504 plan and or an IEP plan. We do encourage their seizure action plan to be included to both of those if they are in a place. But I will say that there is a large percent of the population of students that either aren't aware that they qualify for an IEP or a 504 plan and they don't have one, and or they don't feel the need academically or physically to gain that type of support. And so there's a big gap in a youth living with epilepsy of who has those in a place and who does not.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to follow up on the comments by Lindsay Bolio. Her daughter, Elise, is BFFs with my daughter, Harper. They have known each other since kindergarten, and I remember when my daughter came home and she said, Elise has epilepsy. And I remember that Lindsay sent these emails so that all the parents were informed. And I know just from knowing Lindsay and being friends with her and seeing Elisa's experience in school, just how hard she works to make sure that the school has the training and knowledge to keep Elise safe. And I just think this legislation is wonderful to put just less of that burden on the parents. Because it's hard enough being a parent. And just, you know, knowing that all of this would be in place in the school, I think would just take a lot of that burden off. And I just wanted to thank Lindsay for coming and sharing her thoughts, because she is an awesome mom and an awesome expert on this. And so, yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Feist. Representative Mueller, any last words?
Just to thank again the testifiers, Madam Chair, and I hope members will support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mueller, and I will renew the motion that House File 469 be laid over. Up next, we have House File 786. Representative Lee, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to present House File 786. House File 786 is a statewide initiative supported by many organizations that work together through the state's after-school network called Ignite After School. This committee has heard from Ignite as you included their work in House File 4 as we look at helping students recover from educational learning loss during the pandemic. The purpose of House File 786 is to make permanent the state's commitment to high.
And representatively, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I failed to make the motion to re-refer House File 786 to the Committee on Education Finance. So just make sure that we have your bill properly before us. So please continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The purpose of House File 786 is to make permanent the state's commitment to high quality after school programs, not just during the pandemic, but in the years to come. The pandemic has made it very clear that many children are left behind when times are tough, but we know that even when times are good for others, there are many kids whose families don't have the means to help them participate in youth enrichment activities. I believe this bill will close opportunity gaps and ensure that low-income young people across the state gain access to activities that reinforce and complement their regular academic programs. The vision of the Ignite bill is to build collaborative programs in our communities aimed at keeping kids safe, inspiring them to learn and support their working families. And just speaking from personal experience, you know, growing up in Minneapolis, having a high quality after school program have shaped me to be who I am today. Having trusting adults, you know, when my parents weren't there, that really, you know, shows the value that my community cared for me and, you know, really inspired my interest in public service to give back. And so with me today are some of our testifiers, you know, from Ignite and other programs that are currently going on today, and I hope that you could get a chance to hear from them. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. So on my list, I have Carrie Dennison Kunin, the Executive Director for Ignite After School. Please introduce yourself to the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Carrie Dennison-Kanin, and I'm the Executive Director of Ignite After School, and we are Minnesota's statewide after school network. I want to thank you for having me at committee today, and also I want to thank Representative Lee for really leading on this issue for the last few years. This pandemic, I know, has been really hard. And for some young people and their families, it's been especially difficult. And I know you've all been hearing over the last couple of year, couple of weeks, testimony and important stories, and, you know, documentation of the needs that young people have coming out of the pandemic. We know that young people are experiencing social isolation and that recovery is not just this summer or even next school year, but also it's necessary to take the long view. Young people need experiences that center relationship building, support mental wellness, create a sense of belonging, and really create opportunities for them to have project-based, hands-on learning. All of these things are what quality after school and summer programs really do. And they're really, it's the definition of a high quality after school and summer program. House File 786 establishes a competitive grant program to fund comprehensive, well-designed and coordinated after school and summer learning opportunities for students in K through 12th grade. And the goals are stated in the bill. They're threefold. The first is to strengthen positive youth-adult relationships and to promote healthy behavior and attitudes to really focus on social-emotional learning for young people. It's also about really creating that protective factor of having an adult in your life who you can trust and who you feel connected to. And oftentimes, the staff and after-school and summer programs reflect the backgrounds of young people that they work with. Another goal is really to develop the skills and behaviors necessary to succeed in post-secondary education and career opportunities, as well as to really focus on school attendance and improving academic performance. We have a lot of research to show that after-school programs can deliver on these goals, and I've shared a lot of that with this committee before, but there is one new piece of research that's really hot off the press that I haven't shared, so I wanted to do that really quickly. This is the study of early care and youth development. It's a longitudinal study, and it followed over 1,300 children from birth to age 26. So it's cool. It's really the first of its kind that's longitudinal. And it found that regular participation in organized after-school activities and programs in elementary school resulted in higher math and reading test scores at age 15, so in that ninth grade transition year. And they also found that low-income students experienced greater benefits in grades and academic achievement when they looked at GPA in ninth grade because of their participation in after-school than do middle-income youth and upper-income youth. So what that's really showing is that after school and summer is a particularly good approach when we're looking at addressing gaps in formal education outcomes. So we know after school works, but access to these programs in Minnesota is really challenged. There's there's a study called America After Three. It's a survey of parents, and it's been happening since 2004. The latest results of America After Three came out in 2020, and it's the first time since the beginning of America After Three where we've seen a decline in participation and after-school programs in Minnesota. So since 2004, it's been going up, and in 2020, we're seeing that number decline. And this is also borne out by the Minnesota Student Survey results, and that's really great because we can disaggregate that data. And so Minnesota Student Survey data shows that upper-income and white students participate more regularly than low-income students, Black, Indigenous, and students of color. We really want to close this gap because we know that this is an effective mechanism to really support student learning. The 21st Century Community Learning Center program is a federally funded grant program administered by MDE that does support this type of learning, and yet they can only fund about a third of the applications they receive due to a lack of funding. So this bill, House File 786, is really going to go a long way to close that funding gap, and it's going to ensure that more communities across the state can provide these kinds of opportunities for young people. So with that, I really want to thank the committee again and Representative Lee, and really hope that all of you will support House File 786. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Mary Swingle, the President and CEO of the Boys and Girls Clubs. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I can't turn my video on, just FYI. The host turned my video off, so you just get my still shot. Sorry about that. it says I can start my video now. Hey, there I am. Yay. My name is Mary Swingle, and I am the President and CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of Central Minnesota. Our organization serves more than 7,000 school-aged children at 18 different locations in the greater St. Cloud area. We fill the gap between school and home by providing youth with a safe, welcoming space with caring adults and positive environments in which kids and teens have fun, participate in life-changing programs and experiences, and build supportive relationships. We focus on closing the education gap by ensuring equity in programming for each youth. We provide proven programs available in the areas of education, environment, health, arts, careers, drug and alcohol prevention, leadership development, and athletics. The clubs offer customized programs through partnerships with community organizations and businesses. For example, our Career Start program works with youth in grades K through 12 to teach communication, self-confidence, and career-focused activities. Children as young as kindergarten engage in problem-solving activities, team building, and other essential transferable skills through play with a purpose. Teens explore multiple careers through field trips, speakers, and hands-on activities. They are given opportunities to lead community service activities And as high school students, they enter into career-specific programs such as our club's own VEX Robotics team, or they may explore health careers and complete our new CNA or Certified Nursing Assistant program. Students learn about entrepreneurship and actually start their own business through our CEO or Creating Entrepreneurial Opportunities program. Youth have the opportunity to explore food safety and preparation through the culinary arts program, or they may even select a technical track where they learn about OSHA safety and various skilled trades. Yes, this all happens at a Boys and Girls Club of Central Minnesota during out-of-school time programming. Since the beginning of the pandemic, we remained open to provide free programming to school-age children of essential workers. We partnered with the St. Cloud, Sartell, and Sauk Rapids school districts and provided the necessary emergency childcare that was required by the governor's emergency orders. While it has been a tremendous challenge, filled with risk to our staff, quarantine closures, and constantly changing school plans, we know that the kids we serve need us. We have extended our hours of operation to provide academic support for hybrid and distant learning. We offer an online virtual club so youth that cannot attend in person have access to those services. We provide support for students whose parents are unable to assist them with their distant learning due to a language barrier. We provide online tutoring and support the growing social and emotional needs of our children. There are countless stories of kids being 50, 60, or more assignments behind in their online learning and simply giving up. Yet, with the support provided by our staff, these students have been able to get caught up. Youth went from feeling helpless to feeling hopeful. As you can see, after-school programs like ours not only provide safe places for youth, they provide the programming needed to become successful adults. Our communities need youth-serving programs now more than ever as we work to combat the negative effects of the pandemic. Our future as a state is dependent upon our children growing up to become productive, contributing members of our society. State funding for out-of-school time is essential. On behalf of all youth and the future of our great state of Minnesota, I ask that you support the after-school Community Learning Grant Bill and establish a competitive grant fund that will provide opportunities for our youth. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else who's logged into the Zoom hearing who wishes to speak for or against this bill? Please use the raise hand function to be recognized. Okay, seeing none, we will move on to member questions. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Lee, for bringing this bill before us. I think it's great. My question is in regards to other political organizations. Would that include the Minneapolis Park Board?
Representative Lee?
Representative Jordan, so in the language we have included language in there that says that the grants could be awarded to community or nonprofit organizations, political subdivision, public libraries, for-profit or nonprofit child care. And so I believe that the Minneapolis Park Board or other park board throughout the state can participate in this. And Carrie, I don't know if you want to add on to that.
Ms. Dennison Keenan, please proceed.
Madam Chair and Representative Jordan, yes, they would be eligible to apply.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's all I had. It's good to hear.
Thank you. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a question to the bill's author. And I see on subdivision 2 begins on 1.20. It states the objectives of the program, and very worthwhile objectives are stated there. And I'm wondering if the author would be open to measuring the outcomes of these programs. A lot of times what we do when we have programs like this is we put in that there'll be a report, an annual report that anyone receiving the grant would have to show some sort of some outcomes of of progress. And so I'm wondering, in light of, you know, making the most of our taxpayer dollars to use them only for effective programs when possible, if the bill's author would be open to putting some reporting requirements of, you know, if these objectives were met or not. Thank you.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott. And so I believe in the language, we do have language in there for MDE to monitor and evaluate the grant recipient performance and effectiveness in meeting their objectives. And Ms. Dennison, if you could just point to that line of the language, that would be great. I will take a look right here too, Madam Chair.
Ms. Dennison, Keenan?
Yes, I am checking the language as well, and I believe that the language refers to monitoring the grant and providing technical assistance.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that will be in subdivision four, technical assistance and continuous improvement. Starting on line 3.1 to 3.4, the commissioner must monitor and evaluate the performance of grant recipients to assess the effectiveness of after-school community learning programs and meeting the objectives identified in subdivision two.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, Madam Chair, I guess in light of that, is there anybody here from MDE that can tell us who's going to monitor that and if they're going to make the results of these grants and the outcomes that they're measuring in this bill, if they're going to make that information public and available to maybe send in reports to the legislature so that we know that when we fund something like this, that we're actually getting the best bang for the buck.
Is there someone from MDE that would be able to speak to Representative Scott's question?
And Madam Chair?
Representative Scott.
It doesn't look like anybody from MDE is here, and I'm not surprised. They weren't probably thinking that was going to be a question directed to them, but maybe that's something the bill author could check with MDE and get back to the committee. I think many of these programs are worthwhile, but we want to make sure that they're worthwhile if we're going to be putting money at them. And that's it, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott. We'll make sure to follow up MDE and provide a written response to the committee. Thank you.
Representative Bull.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lee, thanks for bringing this bill forward. I've got to admit, after school activities, after school care is very important, especially, you know, given the COVID lockdown and the folks falling behind on learning that we're seeing today, but I think it's been important for quite some time. But my question is, why are we choosing one in particular to support when I see some being a certain amount being earmarked for Ignite? Why are we doing that? And have we done this elsewhere? You know, chosen one nonprofit in particular?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I will answer that, and then I could defer to Kari from Ignite too. Right now, this is a competitive grant program, and then Representative Bo, I think what you are referring to is the 2.5% for technical assistance that if MDE did not have the capability that they could partner with Ignite After School, Ms. Kari, who is on the call to, you know, really provide that technical support for all the different applicants from throughout the state of Minnesota when they apply for this grant program.
Ms. Dennison Keenan, anything to add?
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Bo, thank you for that question. And I would say Ignite agrees with you that we really wanted a competitive grant program that would be available to a broad range of after-school programs, various nonprofits. We recognize that every community is different and has different players that need to come to the table. So from Boys and Girls Clubs to YMCAs to parks to libraries. So the piece in the bill that's specific to Ignite, and maybe I didn't say this in the beginning of my testimony, Ignite After School, as the statewide after school network, we do not provide any after school programming directly. We're a network of all of the different kinds of organizations that do, and what we do at Ignite is provide professional development, and we also operate the continuous program improvement process for after-school programs in the state. And so that piece of it is really for us to just provide professional development to programs to make sure that they can be, they are high quality. And when they're high quality, that's what achieves the outcomes that have been stated or the goals that are stated in the grant. We want to make sure that we are working towards those outcomes.
Representative Ball.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Representative Lee, last word.
I just want to say thank you very much, Madam Chair and committee members, for this conversation, and I look forward to all of your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee. I renew my motion to re-refer House File 786 to the Committee on Education Finance. The clerk will take the roll. Ms. Larson?
Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hassan? Vice Chair Hassan? Representative Erickson? Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Bennett? Representative Bennett? Representative Berg?
Yes.
Representative Bowe?
Yes.
Representative Christensen?
Yes.
Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keeler?
Aye.
Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Representative Mueller?
No.
Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
Aye.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Aye.
Representative Bennett? Madam Chair, there are 14 ayes and 4 nays.
Thank you. Thank you, Ellen. The ayes have it, and congratulations, Representative Lee. You are on your way to education finance. There being no other business before the committee today, we stand adjourned.